This hour is brought to you by ETI Schools of Skilled Trades. Step up to the plate, start your career in welding or HVACR at ETI School of Trades. Visit eticampus.edu to learn more.
Live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
WMVP, WSHE HD2, Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
A Good Karma Brands radio station.
Talking to Robbie Gold in our Old National Bank studio. You can watch it on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. We're on 100.3 HD2. Of course, good old-fashioned ESPN 1000, AM 1000, and then download that ESPN Chicago app. All right, you told us this story. Do you know where I'm going, by the way, with how I've hinted this?
Go ahead.
So I
love surprises.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you told this story to us probably 3 or 4 years ago when you started having great success in San Francisco. When the Bears were going through kicker issues, and we would get calls all the time. We still do. Friends this past weekend brought up to me, Robbie Gold should still be a Bear, everything like that. And you once told us the story that you, like, it wasn't necessarily just the Bears' fault, that you needed to be released or gone from the Bears to capture the second half success.
Yeah, listen, like, I wanted to finish my career here, right? Like, I would have loved to have been a Bear like Jason Hansen for 20-plus years. Like, that would have been amazing to me. Those are things I can't control as a player. Like, you're not going to go to Jed York or the McKesson and be like, hey, I'm going to tell you who to keep in the locker room. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, and as a player, like, I think the hardest thing that it happened for us is like, hey, here's the first time in 11 years I'm going to have to transition to a new team. We hadn't been winning. What's the most important thing to me now, right? And it was about winning and finding a place where I could potentially win a Super Bowl, because that's what I want. Like, that, like, the end all be all, I would give you everything back to win a Super Bowl. Like, because you could live on a Super Bowl win, like the 85 Bears, for 40 years,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Like, and I tell people, like, they don't bring back NFC champs. They don't.
We do.
I mean, I'm here. I'm the two-time NFC champ.
Okay,
no, thanks for having me. Yeah. I don't know if Yurko would let me in, but I'll give him a hug when I see him. You know? But I think, you know, there's just something to, you know, the oldest guy in the locker room. You've been there the longest. You've seen how the organization works. And there's a lot that gets put on your plate. And I kicked that year. I was 86%, I think. It wasn't like I had a bad season. Like, I missed 6 kicks, but we went through 2 or 3 long snappers. We were transitioning from a new head coach and general manager. And I think they kind of looked at it as, you know, they're rebuilding. And like I said to you earlier, they were looking to get money somewhere. But really, like, it's been awesome for me because I've been able to see different organizations. I've been able to play for the Mara family. I've been able to play for the York family now for going on my 6th year. And it's unique to be able to see how and why organizations are successful, right? And I think there's a reason why some teams are always going to be at the bottom and some teams are always at the top. And for me, like, to get a fresh start, to get a new energy, to get that nervous butterfly going again, and have a lot more to play for than I had in the past, other than trying to, you know, get the team heading in the right direction, was fun for me. And then I go to San Francisco and I rebuild. I mean, we went 0-9 and I had the most fun I've ever had playing football, which is crazy to sound. I was 0-9. We were losing games. They were tight games. Kyle Shanahan probably went from, you know, being a dark-haired gentleman to having full head of white hair, just thinking we might go 0-16. But that was the most fun I've ever had. And for me, it's been great because I think I've kicked about 88, 89% since I left. And I had a new energy. I had a new focus. And it was good. It was something I needed. And it was great that they got to go their direction. And I'm happy that how things have worked out for me since I've left.
So were there any hard feelings, or were they quickly – you overcame them a pretty quick amount of time?
You know, it's funny. Like, I've seen a bunch of people that I've played with go, and I'm like, man, like, why can't you finish your career here? Like, why don't you get that opportunity as a legacy player? But I think, you know, it's just not how the business of football works.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're going to see with this regime a little bit. They're going to come in. They're going to do what they need to do in order to get it going in the right direction. I have no hard feelings towards anybody. You know, I wanted to make sure that when I got cut,
yeah, we posted on social media just to let teams know that I was getting cut. But, like, I want to make sure that before I talk to anybody in the media, the people I talked to the first was in the building. Mm-hmm. I got cut at 9 o'clock at night and no one was there. It was a trainer, John Fox, and Ryan Pace. I didn't get to say goodbye to anybody in the building for 11 years. And you cut me at the very last minute in hopes that, you know, obviously I wouldn't get a job, which wasn't the case. You know, I had opportunities. I just chose not to do those because I didn't want to go to play for places that we're going to lose. I just didn't want to. But I think, you know, it was nice. It was nice to get a fresh start. It was probably nice for them, too, you know, to move on.
No, it wasn't.
I'm just saying, like, it is.
You were at the double doink game. You just told us about it. It wasn't good for us.
Here's the thing. Like, it's sometimes, like, a fresh start and rebuilding, like, those are things that you have to try to figure out, right? If you know you're not going to win and win right away, you know, go give a young kicker a chance because your draft stock's going to go up if he misses, right? And you know that you're in a transition period. Yeah. So it took them a couple years to be competitive, which was 2 or 3 years later when they signed Cody Parkey. But at the end of the day, like, they were able to go see what was out there. They were able to go figure out, like, what makes sense to try not to make that same mistake again. And they got Cairo, and Cairo's done an unbelievable job here.
What about Augusta Silence? Did you ever hear the Augusta Silence story?
No.
They brought in like 14 kickers, and they did a whole kicking circus camp. And they would...
Brought attention to it.
Yeah, and then instead, very weird. Instead of like trying to blast loud crowd and throw off the timing, they made everyone be quiet. Yeah. Because to see if that would put more pressure on, and we always joked
Here's
about
the thing.
Augusta
like,
Silence.
I'll give every coach and organization the credit of trying to build their players to what they think they need to do to win. However that is, throwing towels, water, I could care less. Like, there's a philosophy by which you try to put people under pressure, and you know I commend them for doing that. What I think a lot of people will miss in that category is there was a bunch of kickers in camp because they were trying to figure out who was next, but they also had a bad salary cap issue. And who's the guys that aren't going to get hurt, right?
Yeah.
So they made a commitment to make that position right, and I commend them for that. But at the end of the day, like, if you don't have a good cap, you're going to see a bunch of teams hire a bunch of specialists because you have to have in the business of football a certain number of players on the roster, and you provide competition in a lot of positions. So, you know, where people are like, oh, this is a circus, this is wild and crazy, well, they're a field goal kick away, potentially, from winning a Super Bowl, right? So they tried to fix it, and to their credit, like, they did everything they possibly could to be able to do that.
I want to get to the San Francisco thing for a minute later, too, because I was telling you at the break, it's football porn for me on Sunday.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
We're going to hug and kiss this out here in a minute.
Before that, I'd love to get your thoughts on, obviously, the Bears, the intention is to move from Soldier Field to a new facility in Arlington Heights that's supposed to be this fantastic, you know, creation. As someone who kicked out there for a very long time and enjoyed it, are you on board with them moving from Soldier Field as a former player going out to Arlington
Heights? Well, I am. I am for a lot of different reasons. It will be a sad day when they move out of the city of Chicago. It just will. Just like it was a sad day when the San Francisco 49ers moved out of San Francisco to San Jose. Now, the way that the rules, and I was a player rep when all this happened, are built, these are things that organizations have to do in order to raise the salary cap, which means you get better players, you can have a bigger number that you can spread out and get more faces.
More revenue for the players.
Yeah, so like, you would love to keep them in Chicago. I would love to see, you know, the city try to keep them and make an aggressive opportunity to do that. But I also think that there's a way that you've seen these new stadiums pop up, be it LA, be it New England, the first one, being the first team ever to really do this, but there's a stadium and then there's shopping centers, there's food, there's movie theaters. It's like a little
community.
Yeah, there's a way for people and organizations to be able to have their own events, whether it be World Cup soccer, whether it be you know, a March Madness,
a Super Bowl,
concerts. It could be a Super Bowl. It could be anything, right? Like, you're not going to get a Super Bowl here in the city of Chicago. Yeah, you could put a dome over it, fine, but you still only have, you know, 70,000 fans, right? Like, these stadiums that are going up, they're big. The game is growing so fast that even organizations and cities have to keep up with it. And listen, it'll be a sad day when it does move to Arlington Heights, but I do think that in the best interest of the fans, the best interest of the organization, this is what makes the most sense to be able to keep pace with the other teams that are starting to do it.
Yeah. Before Waddle and you get into your football porn conversation, I got two things here from this past season. When did you, now are you consciously trolling the other teams when you're warming up either before the game or at halftime, going through like the cheerleaders and everything like
that? We saw that with the Rams game, right?
So that's the one I did on purpose. Like the Dallas Cowboy cheerleader one is completely blown out of proportion. And I'm very mindful of like staying away from people. So our locker room was to the left. The Dallas tunnel is to the right. So when I come out, I'm like, all right, the cheerleaders are at the 50-yard line. Usually they kind of go towards the sideline and then go down. So I'm like, I'll be fine. I'll kick it to 30-yard line, 25-yard line. Well, here I am taking my steps back and going over, and I just see pom-poms come. Like, are you kidding me right now? Like, are you serious? And then I didn't realize it at the time, but after the game, my brother calls me. He was at the game. He was like, dude, what the heck is wrong with you? I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, he's like, why are you kicking in the middle of the gym? I'm like, dude, I literally was at the only place where I could kick. They came down by me. I didn't think it would be a problem. I mean, and then the Green Bay one popped up. But then the only one I really did on purpose, I was literally kicking at halftime at the NFC Championship. And the Rams players, who we've beaten 6 or 7 times in a row, right, there was a little animosity there. So I was kicking, and they literally stood in my way. I'm like, hey, do you guys mind moving? They're like, yeah, a few choice words. I was like, all right, well, if they get hit, I don't really care.
It's all
like,
you. It's not,
yeah, like, yeah. You know, wow. So this became a whole playoff thing. I don't really think that that's kind of my demeanor, but I don't know. Maybe we'll keep it going.
What a great rivalry this has developed. You know, I mean, it's always been one, but it's just been enhanced. All right, to the checkers versus chess. We always hear that you know, that old adage that, hey, you know, he's playing checkers while he's playing chess. I truly believe that Kyle Shanahan is playing chess and everybody else is playing a different game. You get a front row seat every single day for him. Is it as brilliant in person as it is from my couch on Sunday?
It's unbelievable. I mean, the offensive mind that this guy, now granted, he's been, I think I sent him every Super Bowl week, I always send him the picture of him on the sideline holding the headsets for his father, you know? But he's been in football for so long that he just, the things that he knows, the things that he's seen, like, the meetings that we have and how he teaches football and how he communicates with the players. I mean, everything has a reason. There's a why for everything. You're never like, oh man, this is a gray area. What should I do? Like, there's always an opportunity that, you know, we've been down in games where we're down 10-0, 14-0, 17-0. If you look back at, you know, the NFC Championship against the Rams, we were down really early. And then the same thing in the last week of the season. But he does things to make sure he knows the chess match that he wants to play later. Right. He's like, all right, we're down, but I'm not going to abandon what I need to do because I have plenty of time as a player. And he's going to put up a ton of yards. He's going to move the football. It's just a matter of whether we can put the ball in the end zone or not. And for the last couple of years, we've been really good in the red zone. The couple of years before that, we kicked a lot of field goals, which was great for me, but not so great for the record, right? But I think he understands and he's become very good situationally. We spend a lot of time in a Friday meeting, probably 35 minutes, where we talk about what other teams didn't do great. Now, do we get everything right? Probably not. But at the same time, like, we're literally discussing it as players. And he's the first guy that I'd say I've had that since Bill Belichick when I was a rookie.
Wow. Is Mike McDaniel the real deal?
Mike is unbelievable. I think he'll be a great coach. You know, he doesn't really have an ego, which is, you know, something that a lot of coaches who get this head coaching job for the first time think that they have to have this persona of being a head coach. But that guy is just as good offensively as Kyle Shanahan. I think he's young. He's got energy. I think for Tua, like, this offense isn't meant to, it's not meant to throw 40-yard bombs all the time. It's meant to control it. It's meant to take what you can get. It's meant to move the football down the field methodically and not turn the ball over, right? And I think he'll do that with Tua. And I think, you know, him and Tua, I can't wait to watch that relationship, because I think that's going to be something that those two will look back on and be like, hey, look what he was able to do for him.
Really?
As much of criticism as Tua gets, right? But this offense is perfect for Tua.
Right.
It's perfect. Like, the zone scheme and running, the intermediate passing accuracy, that all fits him. And that's a big reason why I think Mike got hired.
I say Jimmy Garoppolo. You say what?
Winner. He's a winner. He's a born winner. I mean, it's hard for us to watch a little bit of this transition going on because, you know, I know Jimmy's been banged up a lot, but you know, Jimmy's been in two NFC championships in 3 years. Like, the guy wins, right? He's a smart player. He came from New England.
He's got no conscience at all, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way. Like, he'll make a mistake, but when he gets back in the huddle in the next series, he's not thinking about
it. Yeah, and he's such a great locker room guy. He's an awesome leader. Like, the way he handled himself at practice, the way he handles himself in the huddle, the way he, like, our seats are right behind each other in the airplane. And it was unbelievable to watch him interact with guys, because I felt like I was in New England again for the first time. I felt like I was getting that, okay, everyone's going to be on the same page. You know, this
so
guy
everyone is, likes him.
He's awesome. Yeah. You'd love him. And it's going to be a hard day if he gets traded, or, you know, obviously he gets cut or whatever ends up happening. But, you know, I'm very appreciative of what Jimmy did for me over my last couple years of my career, because, you know, we weren't very good in San Francisco until we got Jimmy. And then we got Jimmy when we won 6 games that year. And then he kind of started the trajectory of the franchise, heading in the right direction, and we played in the Super Bowl.
Now boy, is he handsome, too.
That's what I was going to say. Isn't it to not have the conscience, isn't it because he grew up and he was always the best-looking kid, and now he's the best-looking guy, so he knows he didn't give a you-know-what because look at me, I'm super handsome.
I wouldn't know. You know what I mean? I wouldn't know. I mean, he's that good-looking, play the quarterback. That's why I have no hair and I play kicker. So.
Now, Danny Zetterman wanted to know this. You were talking to Danny. When he was dating the porn star, was that a subject in the locker room?
We teased him a little bit about it. But, you know, listen, like, it's
he should be teasing you guys.
But here's the thing. Like, that Jimmy is the nicest human being ever.
Really?
He's the nicest person ever.
That's good to hear.
It is good to hear.
Now break some news. Is Debo coming back?
I'm sure he will. He was there for mandatory minicamp, so... you know, listen, Debo's a big part of our offense, and I think everybody knows that. You know, it's hard because, you know, you want to get to a number that you're happy with as a player, right, and what you deserve. But then you have to look at it from the organization side. They have him for one more year, and they have him for 2 franchise years. So they really have him for 3. So that's like, it's a give and take. You know, the organization doesn't want to pay top dollar. They never do. That's just part of it. And then you got to find a happy medium. And You know, Debo has a lot to play for. He was a great player for us last year, and we didn't have a lot of running backs because they got hurt. You know, he stepped in and filled a lot of roles for us that made us the team that we were at the end. And, man, was he fun to watch
as
a player.
You mentioned earlier that you were a player rep. From as you zoom out, you look at the league from the player's perspective. Have in the past or currently, are the players getting enough based on the enormity of the market and all that's produced, have they fought for the right things collectively?
Well, you always want to fight for more, right? But you have to do the give and take, right? So you hope that your leadership, you know, we always fought to get more piece of the pie, which we normally did. But then sometimes you gave up some things that, you know, you might not wanted to give up, but you knew that, okay, it makes sense to do that. So, you know, that'll always happen. I think one of the best things that happened in recent deals is that they're longer term deals, right? So, yeah, it stinks because, you know, you have a period of time where teams are making a lot more money than they used to make, right? And you don't get to go re-up because now you're seeing contracts for players that are actually shorter than normal. You don't see the 6 years as much unless it's a premier quarterback in the NFL. Now you're seeing guys sign 3-year deals, 2-year deals, 4-year deals because they know the money's only going to go up. And coming out of COVID, when the pay cuts had to happen and everyone did their piece, that's starting to rebound in the next 2 or 3 years. So, you know, you're always going to fight for more. You're always going to want to fight for more salary. But the problem for us is, I always say to people, is, you know, the salaries are always going to be there. Mm-hmm. You're going to fight for more revenue share, no doubt. But at the end of the day, like, guys, when they're done playing football, the hardships for them are health insurance.
Right.
Right? It's education. It's things that you don't really think about that you want to fight for more for them when they're done. Now you got to get to 3 years to get it and then some and earn whatever. But
you can provide that perspective because this is your 18th year. You're sitting in a different seat. The guy that has been in the league for 3 years, all he's worried about is his salary going
100%.
Up. And I think that from my perspective, listen, I've been out since 95. So I'm really in the stone ages, but the thing with age comes wisdom to a certain degree. And the one thing that I wish I could go back and do in time is vote differently on certain issues where you know, healthcare and retirement stuff was more of a focus back then than hopefully. I think they made some, you guys have made some strides recently.
You learn, you live and you learn like anything else. But I think one of the unique things as an older player is there's a lot of times where you really don't get a chance to choose your transition period out.
Right.
Right. And for a lot of players, you play till the wheels fall off and then what's next? And, you know, I think for guys, there's a lot of resources and opportunities that we can take advantage of. Now, some of them time-wise don't really make sense, but at least it gives even older players a chance to go do those too. So, you know, I think from a league perspective, you're seeing the league grow everywhere, not just here in the U.S. You're seeing it grow internationally. You have a game in Germany that they haven't played in a long time. You're seeing opportunities come up where they're able to focus on the business of football, so you can get to that 10-year mark, 8-year mark, and start negotiating the next one.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, as players, you always, obviously, it's part of it, right? You always want more money and more to spread out. But again, you can get as much money as you want, but just you never know where it's going to go.
Right.
You can't tell a general manager how to spend it, and you can't tell an owner how to spend it.
Robbie Gold hanging out with us. Let's do one more segment. I want to ask you if you could put together your favorite foursome of former teammates, because I want to weave in the golf that you were just participating in. Tell us some stories from that, and then we'll talk about the opener, Bears and Niners, and how excited you are for that one. Robbie Gold in studio with us. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Talking to Robbie Gold in our old National Bank studio. Liam Hendricks will be calling in from Minnesota here in the next half hour or so.
Big series for the Sox.
Yeah, huge.
Heading into the All-Star break.
What are you following? Are you following Chicago sports? Are you following sports in general?
Sports in general, but obviously Chicago sports are big. You know, it was fun to watch the Warriors win the NBA championship. That was fun. I mean, they play such a great brand of basketball. Reminds me of the old Bulls, and I know that people go crazy that I say that, but just the unselfishness of how they play, that was fun.
Do you know any of them from being in the same town, sort of?
Yeah, so I was just with Steph and Andre at that golf tournament, but I got to know a couple of guys because I have the same massage therapist as the Warriors do, so it was pretty cool to watch that run. But then, you know, listen, like, it was neat to see Williams sit down the Sox players. I'm like, hey, listen, you guys are underachieving. Let's get going. Now, granted, the guy you're going to have talk here at 3:45 is not underachieving by any means. No. Probably one of the most dominant closers in the game. But, you know, we're a Cubs family. You know, our kids love watching the Cubs. We've been to a handful of games, went to a couple Sox games. But, you know, the Cubs are in a little bit of a rebuild. You know, they're going through their transition after they won the World Series of trying to figure out the young pieces and what they're going to have. And, you know, listen, Ann Happ, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
How cool of a story is that?
Fantastic.
I mean, here's a guy who drafted in the first round, comes up, ends up probably, I was watching an interview the other night with him. He said he was going to get benched and they're like, give us a couple more chances. And now he's an all-star.
Yeah.
How cool. And he's an unbelievable guy. So, you know, you root for guys like that. And, you know, you get your core pieces like that around, you're going to have some success down the road.
What? So just listening to you speak, like, it sounds like you can run a franchise. It sounds like, you know, like,
I don't know if I could run one, but I would love to help for sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You could definitely do a talk show. I think you've always been comfortable with a mic. You've done shows for us. You've always been a great guest. What do you want to do?
You know, it's interesting. So I have an event management software company called Eventlify that we started completely on a whim that I was doing Microsoft Word, Excel spreadsheets and emails and phone calls. And I had my kids and I wanted to stay happily married. So my brother-in-law started a piece of software for me just to kind of register golfers. And eventually people were like, hey, can we use it? So we turned it into a company, and that's been growing pretty significantly over the last couple of years with COVID, and we keep building out. You know, we have anything from golf software, we have a single ticket, we have donation campaigns, and we're really changing the landscape of, you know, how mobile bidding and everything else is coming together. So that's been a lot of fun. So I can wake up in the morning, play football, and then I can do anything from cancer research to you know, any topic you can possibly think of. So it's really cool for me to be able to do that because I love the charity side. You know, I'd love to obviously do some TV or radio when I'm done, just to kind of stick around the game of football or, you know, get involved. There's places that teams that have older players come back and help at their executive level. I would love to do that. I mean, I think the knowledge of football that I have, playing for a couple owners, seeing it, playing for as long as I have, I think I provide a lot of value in that capacity. But, also I think being able to connect with the alumni is a big thing. Yeah, we'll see. I think I'll have opportunities. And, you know, the biggest thing is that this is my seventh year away from Chicago in the fall. And I spent five of those seven away from my kids. So
I was gonna
I'm really excited to be able to coach my kids. I'm excited to not just be a volunteer coach.
So they live here while you're in San Francisco.
Usually they do. So, during COVID, they stayed here because it was just going to make more sense. But I didn't see them for 6 months because we couldn't see anybody when we traveled. We'd stay in a hotel. And everyone went through their transition periods with COVID, right? But it'll be fun to have them kind of be at more games as, you know, I'm on the back end of my career.
Tell us about the experience in Tahoe this past weekend, because that thing looks like a blast on a number of fronts.
Yeah, I mean, we had an awesome week. I got back from Greenbrier. I did a speaking engagement there, which is a three-day golf trip. Then I went to an Icon series in New York City where it was the U.S. versus the rest of the world. So my team was like Michael Strahan, Michael Phelps, Reggie Bush, Freddie Couples was our cat. I mean, you had to pinch yourself being in a locker room with 12 people that we had on our team. We ended up winning. It was pretty cool. I finished our round and got a picture with Freddie Couples in the trophy and then flew out to come back. We went to Dude Perfect in Nashville. My kids got to meet them, and they love them on YouTube.
Tell Waddle, do you know what Dude Perfect
is? Yeah, they do all the crazy sports-related stunts.
And they were awesome. So my kids got to meet them, which was pretty cool. We ran a 5K, and then we went out to from Nashville to Tahoe, where American Century and NBC put on probably the best golf event, celebrity golf event. So we get out of the car, and we get ready to go check in the hotel, and the first person that the kids see is Larry Fitzgerald, and I'm pulling the bags out of the car, and Larry goes up to my kids, who are all 8, 6, and 4, and he's like, "Hey, San Francisco or Arizona, who are you cheering for?" And my kids just automatically, time stopped, they turn to me, and they're like, "Dad, why is this guy asking me this question? Like, how am I supposed to answer this, you know?" So I was like, "Well, you guys know who that is?" I'm like, "That's Larry Fitzgerald." They're like, "Oh, Larry, what's up?" And they freaked out. But the whole week, when they were in the tent having meals, or they saw him, it was like Larry knew him for 18 years. It was really cool. So we get to a point where they're meeting Travis Kelce and Josh Allen, all these guys. And my middle son's like, "Dad, how do you know all these football players?" Like, they have no, and I guess this is part of Yurko's problem, right?
Yeah, right.
Kickers aren't football
players.
Just the kicker. But it was kind of neat that, you know, in our house, we don't really talk about football and what I do. It's more about, like, when I'm home, I'm dad, right? So, it's hard to be away from them, but I think it's unique too for them to be around the game and see those guys. And my kids were completely awestruck by Travis Kelce, and Travis was unbelievable, and all the guys were. Like, if you play in that event, you got to be a good dude. So, but we had I played with Rob Riggle, which was awesome.
Funny guy,
yeah. Awesome. That was great. Kyle Williams,
you remember him? Tyler, one of Tyler, our producers. Well, yep. First experience, we taped Rob Riggle at the Super Bowl
in Miami, a couple years ago.
Brand new, and Tyler didn't hit the record.
Oh no. That didn't probably work out for you very well.
Mm-hmm. I know it was a great interview.
The teleprompter didn't really work at karaoke night for him either, and that didn't end well for the teleprompter guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Rob's great. Rob's unbelievable. Like, he loves to put on a show. Like, he's a super funny guy. Obviously, he was in the service, so we appreciate that as a service member and everything he did. But yeah, like, they had a celebrity karaoke, and he was the first guy to go because he was emceeing, and the teleprompter wouldn't go. And I felt bad for him because he was up there trying to sing with no lyrics.
Yeah.
How was the golf? I know you're an accomplished golfer.
I like to golf. I didn't play as well as I would like to. Finish 30th. I hit the ball really good off the tee, but I didn't putt very well. My approach shots weren't great. But what was cool for me is this is the first time my kids were there. So they got to go out in the ropes and the pro-ams and putt and do some fun things. And
there's some guys that play in that event that if they focus solely on golf, they could probably play on.
They're pretty good.
I mean, senior
Romo,
tour.
Mulder, Derek Lowe, Pavelski. I played with Pavelski, Joe Pavelski, the first day. He had 12 points. And he's a stick. Like, he can play. And he went on to shoot 50 points after that day. He shot 1 under and 4 under, I think.
Wow.
Respectively. So, There's a lot of guys that play a lot of good golf out there, but we had a lot of fun. It's always the best way to end your summer, and now we're gearing up and getting ready for training camp here at the end of July.
If you're putting together this foursome, this fictional foursome of former teammates, they could only be former teammates anywhere, and it doesn't matter if they're a good golfer. You want a good, fun time with three other guys that you have played with the Bears, with the Giants, with the Niners. Who are you taking in your foursome?
Well, the first one's definitely Urlacher. I mean, just because he's great. He's one of the best guys. But you can also gamble with him a little bit. You can have some fun, right?
Has he pulled the snake trick on you?
No, he knows better.
Yeah. He knows what do you mean he knows better?
I won't
you
fall
wouldn't
for
fall
that.
For it.
Yeah, I won't fall for it. So,
he takes this fake snake out of a cooler, right? And he puts it at the feet of one of his partners, and they always freak out.
And it's great because he's got some good videos. We've seen it. I've been around when he's done it. But Urlacher for sure. He's a good player. We could have some fun. You know, I'd probably bring Anthony Adams just for the comedy side of it.
Spice is a funny man.
Yeah, he would just bring a lot of enjoyment to that foursome for sure. And then who would my third?
Is there anybody you've gotten really close to in San Francisco that would join
that
group?
McGlinchey. Jimmy G doesn't really play golf. Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame, one of our first round picks. He's the only guy that really plays. Nate Sudfeld, I guess, plays a little bit, but Mike and I play a lot of golf together. But I play a lot with Mike, so I feel like I don't get to play with Urlacher as much as I play with McGlinchey, so it wouldn't make it as special. You know what? This is hard. The last spot would be, you know what? I would leave it for a coin toss for the last one because I've had so many good teammates from Alex Brown, Lance Briggs, Charles Tillman. You go to New York, I had Eli Manning as a teammate. You know, I think Julius Peppers, you know, any of those guys. It's always fun to, it's always fun to relive some of the glory days, as crazy as that sounds. But it's awesome to see some of these guys. You look at Ryan Poles. He was a teammate of mine in, I think, 2006 in training camp.
Do you remember him, though?
Not a lot. People had mentioned it to me, and I went back and looked at, like, the roster and everything. I said, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. And then you see kind of the people he trained under, and you understand kind of, like, that makes sense, right? Because those are the people who drafted him or brought him in. And so, you know, it's always fun to be around those guys to talk – you know, shop and you know, their kids were, I mean, some of these guys' kids were literally crawling around on the grass and now they're going to college. You know, like, where did time go?
Terrence Metcalf, right?
Yeah. DK Metcalf, this is no joke. I'm getting ready to play Seattle the first time he was there. He's like, hey, man, you remember me? I'm like, no, not really. He goes, I'm Terrence's son. I'm like, there is no way you are Terrence's son. He's like, I swear to God. He's like, you used to play. I'm like, oh my God, Robbie, you're so old now. Yeah. You know, like, you're so old. But it's cool.
He's a grown ass man.
But it's cool to see. But it's cool to see that though, right? Like the pedigree of, like, you know, Terrence was a big dude. Like he was now he's not as ripped as his son. Right. But you know, I think it's unique that now you've accomplished something if you've played long enough to be playing with kids of the players you originally came to the league.
Can you say, like, emphatically that Urlacher was your favorite teammate? Like, we've gotten to know Brian very well, but
he's the best. I mean, Brian would do anything for anybody.
Great teammate,
the best. Yeah. He would give you the shirt off his back if you needed it. He would give you a home to live in. He would teach you. Like, it was just amazing to watch that big of a superstar how he treated everybody.
Yeah,
like truly, like how he took you. It didn't matter if you were offense or defense or a specialist. Like, he treated everybody with a lot of respect, and if you ever need anything, he made sure he asked how you were doing. And, you know, that was a great locker room. I mean, we had some really good players, but you had some people that you could rely on to, like, build a career off of. And, you know, I was lucky enough to start in New England with Tom Brady and Mike Vrabel and, you know, Teddy Bruschi. I mean, the list goes on, Corey Dillon. But I think, you know, you get – and we were talking about this a little bit off air, but, like, if you get in a system as a player – that fits your style, you're going to be successful. But you can go to somewhere else and be terrible because the system doesn't work. But I also think it's a locker room of guys that helps people come along and transition from city to city or team to team or coach to coach. And that allows you as a player to get on the same page quicker than everybody else.
Are you excited to see the two young guns battle in the opener, 49ers and Bears with – I mean,
Trey Lance and Justin Fields.
I don't know if it's official that Lance will start, but Lance against Fields?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. You know, I think if you go back and look at what Indianapolis did in a downpour of a game, and of course we weren't full strength, but still no one is in the NFL. You know, he played really well defensively against our offense. He was probably one of the guys who, quite frankly, played the best or
Eberflus's defense
against us in any of the 6 years or 5 years I've been there. So, you know, I think it'll be a great matchup. You know, you're hearing a lot of this talk of like a rebuild in Chicago, which I get, but you know, the Justin Fields, I mean, that guy is such an incredible athlete. He's so powerful. You know, I think if you can get him in a system where he gets comfortable and allow him just to play and be him like he was at Ohio State, it'll help him a lot. You obviously, here you need a running game, especially when you get late in the season. The defense is always going to be solid. That's just some monsters of the Midway. That's what it is. So I'm excited because we're here early in the season and the weather's nice.
Right.
Usually the San Francisco game gets put in December month, usually, or November. But it'll be fun. I always love coming back here. It's, you know, the first time I came back here to play, I forget, 19 or 18. It was wild to hear how many people were actually booing. You know what I mean? I was shocked by that. And that's because they're just a great fan base. Like, they literally just want to win so bad that they don't care if you played for them. They don't care if you're all-time leading scorer. And that took me, the first field goal, I was like, thank God it was a 20-yard field goal. So I was like, what the heck? I didn't ask to leave, you know? Yeah, and it's funny because I'll get the comment, like, when you left, I'm like, I got fired. Like, I didn't get asked to leave, you know? But it'll be fun. It's always great to come back to Chicago and play. And it'll be, my family will come back and they'll be able to watch the game and all that, which would be neat.
Always appreciate your friendship.
Fantastic.
You're great on the air. Like, just a couple of things. Like, when the double doink game, my wife was taking care of the suite that Robbie was in, and you always know how people are on how they treat service workers. And she could not have said better things about you. The way, like, you would text me when I was diagnosed.
Yep.
The way you stood by JD as a friend when he was healthy and then in sick, and like, you're just a great dude, and we appreciate the friendship.
And the same goes for you guys. I appreciate you having me today. Like I said, it brought back a lot of memories. I used to do this with JD, who was a dear friend of mine. And obviously, you know, if you guys ever need anything, I'm here, and I'll call in if I have to at 5 a.m. from San Francisco or whatever.
We're going to take you up on that,
so,
right?
Yeah.
And literally, continued success, because I don't think you think this is ending anytime soon.
I hope not. You know, I think I have a couple more years left to play, but I have a couple more things I want to accomplish, and hopefully that Super Bowl happens sooner than later. But there's some other things personally that I think would be really cool to be able to leave as a legacy behind when I'm done playing.
And make a very good case for yourself as a Hall of Famer as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I want to make the Hall of Fame. I know it's a very exclusive group. I think there's a lot of moving parts to that, but I think if you can go out and play a solid couple more years, you're going to have an opportunity to put yourself in that category. And if you do, I think, you know, there's no better city to live in, and there's no better team, obviously, to be able to put your brand on than the Chicago Bears and the 49ers and the Giants. So for me, it'll be fun. Hopefully it happens, but I think it has to happen 5 years after I'm done playing, so hopefully this isn't for like another 10 or 15 years.
You know? Down the road.
And how about when Yurko replays that soundbite tomorrow, what would you like to say as he says?
I think I'm just going to buy him a t-shirt that says specialists are people too. You know, I mean, listen, like, no offense, like, you know, he was a defensive-minded football player, right? Like, he would probably get mad because they come in and they're scoring points. It's like when the offense, I only come in whenever the offense doesn't finish the drive, right? So, like,
that's right.
For him, he's getting a breather now. Granted, he probably has to rush the A gap or the B gap, and he's probably mad about that for 5 seconds. But I love him. He's a big teddy bear, and I'll give him a hug when I see him.
That's awesome. Yeah. You're the best. Thanks,
Robbie.
Robbie Gould, there he is. Great stuff with him. We'll talk to Liam Hendricks coming up next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000, and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Getting a lot of text messages from friends who enjoyed the interview. It's never really with our show. We don't even like to call them interviews.
Conversation.
We like to have good conversations with people that we've built relationships with through the years. While you were gone, Cuddy was in. It's a testament to the relationship we built up with Cuddy. We had Robbie Gould today. Such a good guy.
think we've built a nice rapport with Liam Hendricks as well.
Yeah, yeah. Liam's going to join us here shortly.
Should I mention his dominance before he comes on? Because Carmen doesn't want us to jinx him.
I know.
As we talk to him.
It's the May 29th stat, and I got that wrong earlier. He's on here. Should we bring him in now?
Yeah, I just don't. If he's a superstitious guy, I don't want to mention.
Let's ask him. Liam Hendricks joining Waddle and Sylvie right now as we're live inside the old National Bank studio. Are you superstitious?
I don't know about superstitions, but I'm steeped in tradition, maybe.
Okay.
Okay, so the reason I ask Liam is because I would like to kind of, you know, talk about the stretch that you've gone on, but I don't want to mention it if you feel like if, in fact, something doesn't go great the next time out, then you want to blame us. I don't want to be responsible for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like once you take away the onus of talking about things, it doesn't really matter. I mean, if you are constantly thinking about the fact, oh, I better not talk about it, I feel like that's even worse.
Okay, so I will say it then. The last eight times out, eight innings, zero hits, zero runs, one walk, 11 strikeouts. Is this as good a stretch as you've been on in recent years?
In recent years, I'd say so. I think I got to, in 2015, I got to 24 in a row batters retired and then drilled Moustakas in the front kneecap. So
on purpose?
No, God. Okay. Played with Moose the time before. He's awesome. I just was trying to go throw a two-seam in when I still threw two seams and, a little too far in.
It happens, right?
No, I mean, yeah, they shouldn't have been standing there.
So what has been the key to this success, Liam?
To be honest, I'm just like it was a little bit before the before I went on the IL, but I was finally hitting the fact that I was throwing breaking balls for strikes. To be honest, breaking balls around the zone, and not only that, just not overcooking things. And then the life to my hitter came back a little bit as well, which is good. Which I want that thing to be as straight as possible. And early on in the year, particularly in the last few years, it's always been a little bit. A little bit more running around.
Talking to Liam Hendricks, it's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. So we're conditioned as baseball fans these days that we hear when there's, you know, a forearm strain, you know, we start wondering, well, what's going on with Liam? When you were on the shelf and in the early stages of that injury, were you nervous or did you know that you'd be fine?
No, I don't. I think anything to do with my elbow has been banged up a year, so it doesn't really affect me too much. The fact that, like, the MRI, we got a couple of people, different people to look at it, and it said that, hey, look, there's no difference in the ligament. You've just got a slight forearm strain. That obviously bodes well. The fact that my ligament's been practically, it has some severe damage to it to begin with. But that's been there for damn near 15 years now. So it's not exactly something that's fresh and new. So it wasn't something that I was overly concerned with. It was just the fact that everyone hears it and then everyone goes down a rabbit hole thinking that this is what's going to happen because, unfortunately, it's like hockey. If we just did hockey, it would be completely different. Upper body injury, lower body injury. Right. Why would you do that? It's much easier. People don't jump down the rabbit hole and be like, okay, he's done for the year now. It's easier.
It's a good thought. It is. Hey, Liam, how important is this series that starts tonight with the Twins?
Obviously, in the grand scheme of the season, it's extremely important. If you look at it from a standings point of view, this is a chance to put us within, a game, I think, maybe a game and a half or whatever it needs to be, or it has the chance of stretching this thing out to the possibility of eight or nine games, and that's obviously a big swing and a big change of what can happen. But we're in this clubhouse, we're of the opinion that it doesn't matter. We're going to be able to come back. We need to rally around. Those last two games in Cleveland were obviously huge, and the fact of the close game and then the game that we kind of took control of, and even when it was 4-0, we didn't really look like ceding it. But that's something that the more we focus on, I think it's we need to just kind of go out there and play easy, play loose, and attack as pitchers and as attack as hitters and go out there and do what we need to do.
You mentioned the clubhouse, Liam, and you know the rabbit hole that you were just talking about. Bob Nightingale had the report that that he's hearing that the clubhouse is cliques and is not getting along. What can you tell us about the Sox clubhouse?
Yeah, I'd love to know what his source is. I want to know if it's a former player who is currently not with us but still in the league from this year. So it'd be interesting to see if where that comes from. But, yeah, obviously, if you talk to anybody in this clubhouse, they're going to give you the same answer, and it's not exactly the same verbatim answer because we all have our own feelings on it. So it's not just a scripted thing that the front office has given us. It's something that we actually truly believe in this club as, is the fact that we're united. We go to bat out there every single day for each other. And this is a clubhouse that has no flaws. It's not a clubhouse where everyone's going in and kind of hating each other or anything like that. It's your normal clubhouse. You're going to have days where you're a little testy. You're going to have days where you're great. And that's the ebbs and flows of this game. But there's no discord. There's no issues in this clubhouse whatsoever. There's no issues with leadership. There's no issues with cliques or people not getting along or anything like this. It's just a complete fabrication.
Could it be a former pitcher with a beard?
Oh, I mean, I think I've said enough already. But yes.
So it reminds you of last year as well, that all is well, normal clubhouse.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think there's obviously we had some guys, we had some hot guys last year that I don't think we quite have this year. I mean, we had Billy Hamilton, who was the ultimate cheerleader on that bench because he knew what his role was. We have guys that are doing that and trying to fill those shoes, but that's just the natural talent that Billy has, let alone his baseball talent. It's his ability to kind of be in the dugout and be that person running around, high-fiving, hugging everybody because of we feel it's a ground ball. Like, he just gets honestly excited about absolutely everything. But it's hard to replicate those guys. We have no issues in this clubhouse. We're having fun, and that's all that matters.
Liam, from our perspective, it looks as if you have as good of, if not the best leadership skills of anyone in that clubhouse. As a closer, as a relief pitcher, can you be the leader of a team based on your position? Does it matter?
I would never go that far. I think I've been around long enough where I've been through some things. And so I have a little bit more of a personal experience with the ups and downs and the ebbs and flows than some people in this clubhouse. But I would never call myself a leader. I think that's a title that is people can say about you, but I will never, ever say that about myself. And no, I think there's much better leaders in this clubhouse. I think I think when you got guys like T.A. and Jose Abreu, who both have very different leadership styles. Obviously, Josh Harrison's been around for a long time. Lance Lynn, Yasmani, you've got these guys that have been around for so long that know how to kind of talk to people and when to pick them up and when to do something quietly and when to do something publicly. And that's something that you only learn over the course of time. It's very hard to be a full-on clubhouse leader as a reliever, just purely based on the fact that you're not around. I'm not in the dugout. Like, I'm out in the bullpen for 5-6 innings a game, and that I can control. We can control our little guys out there, but it's really hard to get into it with the position player when, one, I'm only playing one inning every third day, possibly. Or two, you're not even around them, so you don't know it. You're hearing everything secondhand, and that's something that I don't ever want to overstep my bounds and overstep what I may have heard, but it could be not what exactly has happened.
You mentioned the sources. His report also included that Kenny Williams had to give a pep talk to the team. Is that true or false?
I mean, Kenny's a good guy to have a pep talk. He's been around this game for a long time. It was around the announcement with TA's All-Star starting selection, and that was something that we're all in there for with Jerry and Rick and Kenny was running around as well. So we had a bunch of people in there, and look, I think it's a great opportunity to try and to talk to the team as a group, because we're not all in the same room very often. So he had a bit of a pep talk, and we kind of lit a fire under our asses a little bit, because I think that's what we need. It's not a leadership. It's not a kind of a conversation that everyone wants to hear, but I think it's something that we needed to hear. Because, yeah, we are currently in the mire of complacency, and something that we're always like, okay, we'll get out of it. Well, until we put the screws to it, we don't know if we can get out of it. And that's something that we need to believe in ourselves. It's like, we're not going to get out of it then unless we start doing things the right way.
Liam, do you feel like you guys may have lacked that sense of urgency leading up to this moment? And do you feel like it's kind of reappeared?
As I said, I think complacency is one of our biggest killers because of the amount of talent and the group of guys we have in this clubhouse. I think that's something that anyone can fall into. When you've been doing well, you fall into that vice of complacency of like, okay, well, we don't have to turn it on now because it will figure itself out. Well, I run into this a lot, and it's something that you kind of have to get to the point of like, no, you remain complacent, that's just going to be the end of you, because at some point you're going to dig yourself too big of a hole that you're not going to be able to rebound out of.
Right.
And that's something that I deal with almost every April for some reason. I'm like, oh no, it'll turn itself around. And then I'm like, no, I need to figure this out myself. and we go attack and we get back to where we need to be. But as a group, it's really hard to get the mixture of different personalities, and we mesh really well, but everyone has different triggers. Everyone has different ideas of the way they need to get better. It could be doing less work. It could be doing more work. It could be doing different work. And everyone needs to find it out for themselves. It's a yes, it's a team game, but it's also a very individual game, and you get guys in different mindsets at the right time, and it all works in the right direction, but it could also go south pretty quickly as well.
Such a good breakdown. Liam Hendricks joining us, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. It's WMVP Chicago and WSHE HD2 Chicago. You mentioned to us last time, we were getting to know you a little bit, and we were going over some facts, and you admitted that you do watch the broadcast, both home and away, of games that you pitch. So when Ozzy, a guy who's had great success as a player and the manager who won a World Series here, is critical or analyzing the team, is that accepted from someone like you?
Look, I have no problem with people being critical, especially if my own personal experience on the mound and stuff like that, because you know what? Generally, I'm thinking the same things. What's always hilarious is to me, it's not the time they're being critical or anything like that. It's when they're blatantly wrong. Now, that annoys me because obviously at some point you need to do some sort of work. And I understand I'm a reliever. But if someone tells me, oh, like I completely changed when he changed his workout or he started eating better, that's just a fake fact, that lie. Because one, I don't work out at all. And two, I eat like crap all the time. So this isn't against Ozzy in particular. I love Ozzy because we have this similar vocabulary.
Yeah.
So, but I listen to both sides because you never know when you're going to pick out a little thing that may, because a lot of the broadcast guys are in the clubhouses. And so you get an opportunity. Like if they say this, especially as a visiting broadcast, they say something along those lines. You're like, I wonder if that's what they actually think, because that's completely wrong. And that fills me with a lot more confidence than anything else.
What is,
if they think this is coming, then all of a sudden they have no clue what I'm actually doing. And that's great for me.
What is the go-to food that you know isn't great for you, but you absolutely love and you just cannot quit?
So at home, I have the same meal I eat every single day. And it is a Philly cheesesteak with just the meat and the cheese, covered in hot sauce and french fries.
Oof. Oh, my goodness.
I wouldn't be able to take the mound. I'd be in the men's room.
How did you come to that? Like, instead the Philly cheesesteak?
So I last year at the start of the year, I'm like, okay, Chicago, let's go to Chicago Beach. Like, and then all of a sudden I was like with the pickled cucumbers and celery and carrots and all that sort of stuff. I was like, no, let me just, some days that's just a little too much. And so I went Philly cheesesteak, but I needed a little something to it. So we covered in some hot sauce and then, that's what I got to. But in Oakland in 2020, I had a cheeseburger and fries with some Doritos every day. I just had that meal that I do. I do everything the exact same every day because I trick myself into feeling like, oh, yeah, I could feel that. Mom feels terrible today, but you know what? Yeah. I did everything that I needed to do, and I did the same thing I did yesterday, and I threw a scoreless inning last night, so I'm ready to go today.
Wow, hey, Liam, I hate to bounce back to a serious question, but what is from, as you just said to us, like the one thing that bothers you most is when people are making comments and they're flat wrong. What is the biggest misconception, do you think, about your team right now from those that are critical of you guys?
I think the biggest one that pisses me off is that we don't care. Because that's not wrong. I mean, yeah, look, there was some stuff last night, and obviously we won the game, and there was a close-up of one of our guys' faces, and he was like, almost looked like relieved that we won. It's like, no, there's no relief. There's no, we don't care that it's not like we don't care that we won or we don't care that we lose. We have passion for this game, but we all show it in different days, and especially yesterday, everyone was exhausted. We had a split doubleheader, which is the worst thing in baseball, by the way. We sat inside for 4 hours. What do you think is going to happen? We're just exhausted for the next 3 days. But not only that, it's we have the passion here. We care, but everybody shows it in a different way. Some guys have the stone face. Some guys show their emotion on their sleeve. Some guys are completely different depending on how the game has gone. Something could have triggered them. Like, I mean, Tim wore a ball off the back at 112. I think he was probably the happiest that we were that ready to be done playing at that point than anybody else. But that's the one that pisses me off, that we don't care, because that's not true at all. We all have our different ways of showing emotions. We all have our different ways of showing the gratitude that we get to play this game every single day. And that's something that I think, as I said, everybody's individual. The more individual, you've got different minds, you've got different emotions, the way you do things. And we actually, everybody in this clubhouse cares when we win, and we care a hell of a lot more when we lose because we know that we didn't do enough.
Did Dylan Cease get screwed from the All-Star game?
Numbers alone, 100%. But at the end of the day, the it's a tricky conversation to have because of there is so many people that are deserving to be there, and you also voted on this what, a month ago. I think that may be something that needs to maybe adapt and change and move forward is the fact that you vote at a specified time, but it's a little bit later. So those guys who put in to give those three or four good starts that all of a sudden can completely change their numbers, that's still accounted for. And that was something I think is that we could possibly talk MLB and move that forward. Baseball's a hard one to do an All-Star game for because there's so many different intangibles. But you're looking at straight numbers. I mean, his K/9 is through the roof. His strikeouts are through the roof. He doesn't have the length of some of the other guys, but he's making up for it with the numbers that he's putting up. And that's something that it's unfortunate. I think he's definitely had an All-Star year. And I pulled him to the side before we got on the plane because same thing happened to me in 19. I thought I had a good enough year to make it. I didn't initially. I got out of later, but Blake Trinan pulled me to the side. I was like, look, I could see it on your face how disappointed you were when you didn't make it. But just know that this thing doesn't define you. Don't let yourself spiral into this thing that, like, I don't know what I have to do this. He goes, because Blake went through it with the reliever of the year in 2018 when Edwin Diaz won it. And he had 50-something saves, and Blake had a .8 and 100 strikeouts and 38 saves as well. Like, had a historic year. But that was something I wanted to pull him to the side. I was like, the best way to combat this, it's not to worry about that little gold star that's next to your name or anything like that. It's the fact that you go out and win a Cy Young game. You go out there and prove to everybody they made the wrong decision picking anybody else other than you. And go out there and win the Cy Young, or go out there and put yourself into the position of you are one of the best pitchers in this game and do it for an entire season, and then you can talk and then be like, hey, look, these are the numbers I had at the break, but I wasn't good enough to make the All-Star team. Now I'm one of the best in the league, if not the best.
See, that's why you are a leader, yeah. Right? I mean, that's why you are. And look, you lead as well, not just in the clubhouse, in baseball. But I admired what you said about Highland Park the other day. I've admired what you said about Pride Week and Pride Day at the ballpark. Do you take it upon yourself to say that and to be vocal? Do you find that to be one of the items that you must do on your job?
Not necessarily the items you must do, but look, I'm in a position right now where I'm comfortable speaking what I believe in and what I'm passionate about. And these are things that if I get asked a direct question, I try not to skirt the issue. I try to answer it honestly and to the best of my knowledge. And that's something that I feel like is genuinely come across well. But that's just something that the more I do, the more I'm comfortable speaking about. And if you ask me something I have no knowledge about, I'm going to tell you I have no knowledge about it. I'm not too narcissistic to the fact that I think I know everything. But it's, I think there's especially the things that I'm I'm very, very passionate about, like Pride Night. It's something that my wife and I, we do a lot in the community to try and advocate towards Pride, the community. And it's something that I hope that I can inspire more people to get up there and talk about rather than the cliched one-word answers that a lot of athletes seem to give.
Liam, what are your personal plans for the time off next week?
To be honest, I have no idea. I have gone with the route of my wife is the rock that has that is kind of with me at every step of the way during the season. So the 4 days, she gets to choose whatever she wants to do, wherever she wants to go. I know we just got our Dalmatian back from training, so we're reintegrating her into the household. And my parents are actually here, so that'll be included as well. So we've got a little bit of time to kind of hang out and do those sorts of things, and hopefully it's a nice rest period, and we can get back and turn that second half around, and hopefully do the reverse of what we did last year, where we had a really good first half and a mediocre second half, and hopefully we have that mediocre second first half and the really electric second half and run with that. But just a lot of rest, recuperation, and some naps on the couch with the dogs.
That's good.
Sounds good. Hey, have a great break, but before you do that, go win four, and thank you for the candor. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Liam.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good one.